sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I am Rolando.
And I am not Rolando. Nah, it's me, Johnny. I'm just kidding.
My companion. That's weird to say after the movie we saw, but anyway.
Beep-bop, I'm your companion.
Beep-boop. And welcome to the show. This week we review Companion. As always, shall we give us the plot in 5 words, we'll give it first thoughts. And then we go to a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go back to TV Corner. We are reviewing Hysteria, Season 1, Episode 6, Speaking in Tongues. And we finally are getting the fallout of the homecoming. And, you know, we see that Tracy is kind of manipulating her daughter, Faith. Yes. And it was directed by Eduardo Sanchez.
Oh, shit.
So
that's cool.
Of the Blair Witch. Yeah. And other things. We saw something else he directed, right? Was it... we're going to fall down that rabbit hole, aren't we? It was like another TV thing, wasn't it? Not Blood Ride. It was...
Maybe it could have been Blood Ride because it's really good.
Satanic Hispanics. He directed something off Satanic Hispanics. And Yellow Jackets.
And so, Yellow Jackets.
There you go.
And Goosebumps.
Just reading his IMDb now. But yes, we are back after a sort of bottle episode, right? Flashback episode.
Yeah, kind of, right? You just get a better feel for Tracy Whitehead's past.
Yes. And we...
Oh, sorry. Eduardo Sanchez also directed Lovely Molly, which I thought was a... I don't think we did that one, but it's a good movie.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not.
Did
I don't
we do
think
that
I,
one?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I've heard of it, to be honest.
Anyway.
Yeah. And I'm just going to go out and say it. I do not like Dylan as a character.
Because he's a fucking idiot?
That, and plus it seems at this point, after everything that's happened to him on the show, from, you know, putting the pentagram on his hand to almost having sex in the in a sort of...
To voluntarily being buried alive. I'm like, what are you fucking doing?
Yeah. I just feel like at this point, the character is like no longer a character. He's just like, what is he doing? Why does he keep falling for the same thing?
So I'm wondering if we're finally going to get, I feel like we briefly talked about it last episode. I hope. not saying my fucking interface crashed. But I'm wondering if Dylan's actually going to be possessed or be like something since he's like a special circumstance child.
And I had mentioned in the other our previous episode, I hope, that that I think that I still believe this is, they're playing some, there's some larger game here being played that is not quite clear. And I think everything about Julie Bowen's, like Linda Campbell's character, she said to the priest and the dad, didn't happen. I'm still under that suspicion. There's a practical explanation as to why things are going on.
She's just got schizophrenia or something?
No, I think it's... I intently believe... I do. I've said this in the previous podcast. I don't trust the dad. I feel like he's too mild-mannered or whatever. And I just find the whole circumstance of what... how, like, once I kind of thought about what happened with Julie Bowen, which basically, like, she... is seeing things, right? And she was able to, by the end, there's other couple of things that happened in this episode, which we can discuss in a sec. But at the end there, she's basically confessing that she did something that she couldn't get pregnant. So she did something. And then that's why Dylan was born. So it leads you to believe that Dylan could be some sort of, he may actually be tied to some kind of like,
ritual or something. Yeah, you're right. The dad is a little too blasé about all that too. Like, oh, you prayed to like a bad thing instead of going, did you fucking cheat on me?
And
is Dylan my kid? Like,
and the priest is recording all of this conversation. And to me, he's recording all this conversation, and when he plays it back, she's like speaking in tongues, right? She's like speaking an entirely different language. And that's like, that's a big wow moment in the whole episode. I suspect there's still like flaws in it because a priest shows up in the middle of the night and this guy looks super suspicious. Suspicious as a priest. So in the middle of the night, records it. And the dad and the priest are there. And I feel like maybe they already had something like that. They were trying to trick her into doing it. As to why, what's the means to an end? I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not sure either, especially coming from Jamie Flanagan, is his name?
Uh-huh.
Who was the story editor and staff writer for Midnight Mass, The Haunting of Bly Manor, The Fall of the House of Usher, Hysteria.
Yeah.
I think Kate Siegel is going to make an appearance. No, I was kidding. Again, I really hope this wraps up something. I feel like we're not going to get that answer.
Yes, because as we learned last week, that the show is been canceled after one season.
Yeah.
So God,
a week has passed by so quickly. It feels like literally just earlier today.
It looks that 20 minutes ago.
We attempted to record that.
Yeah, but I guess that's what we're missing, right? The why. Why is this happening, right? And I think that's kind of like, to me, the last big remaining mystery of the show.
Yeah.
Is why is this happening to this town? Why are they, why is Julie?
Because now we know everything about Faith and what happened to her. And,
right.
You know.
The reverence stuff.
Tracy's fault, to be honest.
Right. And then we kind of see where that plot line's going. And then the whole Dylan thing with the kids. Clearly, it's their young kids misbehaving. They don't really, like, believe in the things that they're... I guess they do now, but it doesn't seem like they have a direction. They're not really being led in any way. They're just are sort of...
I mean, what's-her-face is still very sus. The granddaughter, the one that... Dylan's not girlfriend.
But I feel like this episode they spent time trying to add a little bit more, instead of her being like blatantly like, oh, I'm a Satanist or whatever, they've tried to like flesh it out a little bit with the conversation she had with Bruce Campbell, where she's like, well, she feels like nobody ever sees her for who she is and so forth. This is like her acting out her rebellion. Is sort of her being seen for who she is, or how she feels, because even though she looks like a popular cheerleader girl, she's not necessarily feels that's who she is, and that's all people see her as, right? So
which is kind of weird. Something about that's not tracking for me, and I hope it's like, God, I hope it's resolved. Like, you know, that you find out she's never been who she was. Or...
Yeah, and I think it's more along the lines of comparing it to like, it's when you're like a teenager and you're like, you want to be rebellious, you don't want to be your parents, so you like get into like weird stuff like Limp Bizkit and and then you look.
Hold on, I'm not gonna acknowledge that.
Hold on,
that is not weird stuff.
And then you look back on it and it's like, why did I even listen to this? This is awful trash music.
Why did I stop listening to this?
I saw a coworker. She had a Deftones shirt and or hoodie, and I'm like, "Yeah,
I'm going to fight your coworker. Only I'm allowed to like that band since I was fucking 13.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Anyways, but yeah, so, I think it's more, it just seems like the kids aren't really, are kind of doing it because as an act of rebellion, you know, out of, they're using this as a way to act and rebel, and somehow Dylan ended up in a coffin.
Because he's an idiot.
Too much of an idiot, in my opinion. Yeah. Too much of an idiot.
I do like how this series has taken a turn for just being more serious.
Yes.
Remember, like, the beginning was very playful. There was a lot of music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it's like things are getting really weird. That's why I have a feeling that the popular girl, like, I don't know why I don't remember her name right now. Like, I think, like, she is slowly brainwashing the rest of the kids. Judith.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's very plausible. That's definitely not off the table. I just feel like it's not, it's going to be one of more of those things where maybe they're going to take something too far, and then they're going to just, like, oh, no, this is, like, too real now. They're not really going to be involved as involved with it.
Yeah. I don't know if we're gonna get any answers. I'm sad. Trying to, like,
I think we'll get it something to kind of tantalize, and these things tend to come out, like, usually not right away, but soon. That about, like, what season two would have been, they'll talk to the creators, and yeah, they'll kind of, like, give you details and outline at least of what they were planning for season two. So
I think it's going to be, my guess is, Chief Dandridge is going to be like, you know, I always knew this is going to bite me in the ass. Well, like, about 40 years ago, or yeah, 40 something years ago, I was hanging out with my girlfriend in a cabin, and I might have pressed a recording on this thing, and I had this book. I didn't think it was going to be a problem later.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we're going to see. Hopefully we see what happens. Oh, and the guy that everybody is confusing for the guy from Severance is still alive and is probably going to spill the beans about the Reverend and Tracy Whitehead and.
Yeah, because we thought he was dead, and that was sort of what the thing that Tracy was using against her daughter Faith, and try to manipulate her into, like, agreeing to basically to cover up her quote-unquote murder. But surprise, he's alive. Yeah,
by framing Jordy.
Jordy, yeah,
yeah, and I think she does try right at the end. I have a feeling that she's gonna.
It's a little unclear.
Yeah, I feel like she's going to be like, hey, my mom's fucking crazy, is what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah, because they have a conversation, Jordy and Faith, right? That, and Jordy really needs a friend, and Faith is not there. And it's something that echoes back to earlier in the season where they were friends. And
it's, Faith is very clearly going like, no, I don't want to be your fucking friend. But it's just so she doesn't get dragged into what's going on.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, Faith is obviously like, I just murdered somebody. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, exactly. And so she's basically allowing her mom to kind of influence her. And it's left very, Tracy takes Faith to Jordy's house, and we don't really see what happens, which is why there's suspicion as to maybe Faith, you know, either talked to Jordy or, like, left something with her that she would, you know, understand or something. I don't know. Yeah. It seemed like it's not going to be as clear cut as Faith framing Jordy.
And I gotta say, pretty much by last episode, and it wasn't like I didn't like the character, I was just not as invested in the Whitehead mom part of the story. But Anna Camp is doing a fucking fantastic job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Just every single person in this show is perfectly casted.
Mm-hmm.
especially Spud. That guy's great. He's funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's...
Anything else happen in Hysteria?
Nearing the end of Hysteria.
Yeah. So...
Well... Oh, Chief Dandridge starts to see stuff.
Yeah.
And somehow was not aware that he had, like, shit spreading on his skin. I guess he's been very preoccupied.
Mm-hmm. I think it still ties back to the drugs, and I think that's probably the answer, is who had the drugs? Was that just a bunch of hippies taking drugs, or is there more behind it, like somebody behind giving those drugs out?
Yeah, because like we talked about the last episode where Tracy saw the thing, like the Revan wasn't involved with that. I mean, I don't think.
He did show up.
He did, yeah. Right before she saw that.
Right. But there's not enough to gather that he was responsible for any of that. But you know what? We're kind of running out of people to blame. Right? So.
Yeah.
It would
be a cool twist if it was the husband, but I'm starting to really lean on, like, he's just kind of a character that's there.
I'm
just a real blasé guy.
I see that. Yeah, definitely. I see that point, right? But I'm holding out the hope that there's more to him. Kind of like...
Because that'd be cool, yeah.
Kind of like the Lost Boys, where who's the leader kind of thing. Mild-mannered dad
That's character. Right. Max the dog.
Max the dog.
Born the dog, yeah. I think Max was the name of the guy.
Yeah. So, like, I was kind of hoping maybe for some that kind of twist reveal that the dad plays the important character. I think pinning it all on just the Reverend and it's some long, convoluted plan he has is a little obvious.
A little too on the nose, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd be disappointed with that. But like you said, we don't know how this is going to end, what cliffhanger they're going to leave us with.
We also, like, we don't talk about it, but we don't know who Tracy's dad is.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Because what if it is the Reverend and we just don't know?
Yeah.
Because right now we don't know the Reverend's actual name.
He is just the Reverend, yeah.
Yeah. And the Reverend and Chief Dandridge have not met. So we don't know if, you know, by the time Chief Dandridge sees the Reverend and he's like, oh shit, it's you, Cameron. I don't know.
Cameron. Cameron the Reverend.
Well, if it isn't, Alan Taylor White.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, that we don't know, but we can assume. Now, granted, it's just an assumption that it's maybe one of those hippie guys.
Yeah, well,
wouldn't that line up?
Oh, well, that would make sense, right?
Yeah,
that they're all connected in some way.
But it just seems like that's too much maybe work to do for the last two episodes. So it's either you save it for the next season, which isn't coming, or you
just go ahead and please, for the love of everything, where are Spud's parents? He's such a good kid, and where are his parents?
Yeah.
It's like, they went out, they both went out for milk and cigarettes.
20 years ago.
You get to keep this beautiful house. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Alrighty. Another fine episode of Hysteria. So you want to move over to our main review of Companion. John.
Companion.
Do you want to give us the plot in five words?
Johnny.
Five words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
And I'm going to be inclusive and do this for all robots. Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop. Just kidding. Coming in at number 3 for Companion. Hollywood ugly boys get kinky. I originally had, you want to hear what the alt to that was? Because I was like, eh. It was a Tesla sex bots get major upgrade. coming in at number two for companion, Skynet has finally become aware.
Yep. Yep.
There was a moment where while I was watching it, I turned to my partner and I was like, Tess. And she's like, what? I went, dun, 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 dun. coming in at number one for companion, Sophie Thatcher, back to forest.
Can't keep her out of the forest. Yeah. Alrighty. So, John, what are your first thoughts of?
Well, to be quite honest, I really enjoyed the movie. It was fun.
Okay.
I'm not sure. It took itself just serious enough. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Because mm-hmm. it was still funny. And I thought everybody did a really good job, like collectively.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only weak character is probably what's her name, the Sophie Thatcher. I'm just kidding. the cat character played by Megan Suri.
Right.
It just wasn't a fully written character, if that makes sense. It was not, you know, just kind of there to serve a purpose and kind of boring. But other than that, I thought the movie was great. I had a lot of fun.
Got it. You hate women. I'm just kidding. Yes.
I only like robot women.
Robot women now.
And robot guys. That's it.
I'm actually dating AI robot currently. Yes. Yeah. They get me. No, I'm going to... I liked it quite a lot. Way more than I thought I would. I had a couple of... There's like a couple of things that I would be like, I really like this. But overall, I love the idea. I love that they are essentially doing like the Stepford Wives, right? But then they're kind of just setting it in this very like... this very, very common kind of story that... We've seen a couple of times in the other movies review where it's like the friend is dating a girl and the girl meets his friends in a secluded cabin and then all kinds of stuff happens. But of course the twist is that she's a robot, right? So, and she's basically like a AI girlfriend. And what I liked about all of that, that I thought was really smart, was they kind of grounded it in enough reality where they would say stuff like they modded her.
You can also like, it's safe to assume this is in like the near future, not right now.
Right. Cause they would use terminology. You would say if you had a phone or like some sort of device, they would use the same sort of hacked it. They would. And so it seems very
modded. It, right?
Yeah. It seems very plausible that something like this could happen. And of course this is a very, and I just had enough of the grounded sci-fi plausibility and pretty, I think, smart on the nose commentary on, you know, modern day internet culture that exists today about, you know, men, more specifically men online, how they behave, sort of like incel behavior and sort of like entitlement and sort of going through all of that with an AI robot and a companion and stuff like that was really smartly done. Though there are a couple of things that I was like, there's one we could probably talk about in spoilers, but the one that I will mention, which I feel like is going to be the opposite of how you might feel. But I personally thought that, let me say this first before I say the next thing. I thought Sophie Thatcher was amazing in this movie. I think it's probably some of her best work. She was excellent.
Oh, real quick, let me tell you this before you move on, because I think you're going to get into some more stuff. You know, if you've seen the trailer, you know that Sophie Thatcher is a robot. They kind of give it away, but that doesn't ruin the movie at all. Like, I think like it's, oh, that's great. It encourages you to want to watch the movie and see what happens.
Yes, I 100% agree with that.
Well, while we were watching it, because I was in the concession line, I missed the little... cold open where it's the fake scenario.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I sat down, right at the end of it. I was like, oh, interesting. And my partner Tess was like, hey, yeah, they met at like a grocery store, and it was a little weird. I have a feeling she's a robot. I'm like, oh. Like, no, I'm serious. I think she's a robot. I'm like, yeah, that's what the movie's about. She's like, oh, I didn't know that. I was like, oh shit, I'm sorry. I thought you saw the trailer. She's like, no. I'm like, oh my God, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and they do a really smart thing about that, where it's essentially like, yeah, I mean, that's probably, they set it up as sort of a meet cute, like a boring meet cute, right? And then there's the first thing you hear is what is it? Iris on, right? Like she's turning on, like, oh, she wakes up and like, oh, we're almost there at the cabin and stuff. Like these little hints that kind of lead into eventually revealing that she's a robot and stuff. I thought was really cool.
And I do like, I mean, you kind of get it from the trailer, but you don't really have a good sense of how devastating it is for her to find out she's a robot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the way they played with that. But, yeah, I thought Sophie Thatcher was excellent. I still kind of hear Julia Louis when she talks. Now, like, I forever, like, burned into my brain the way Sophie Thatcher, like, acts and stuff. I'm, like, thinking of Julia Louis.
Yeah. It's like I had a hard time not thinking, like, aren't you a special effects makeup artist for Mia Goth and Maxine? I'm just kidding.
And I feel like her performance was excellent because, like, she does, like, subtle things when she's a robot and little things and... They're more early on, and then, you know, just like weird behavior and like way she would communicate.
Superficial.
Mm-hmm.
Super superficial. It doesn't matter, but you know when you realize you're like, okay, well, this person's supposed to be a robot or whatever. So you kind of start to look at, I don't know why. I think it's human nature to look at like imperfections or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time I noticed Sophie Thatcher's teeth, and I have like a bit of a crush on her teeth.
Why? What about it?
Because they're not perfect.
Mm, yeah. I didn't notice them. But
because you're not superficial. Yeah, you're a good person. And I'm a real piece of shit. Yeah.
Only because I don't think I've ever seen her teeth. I've never paid attention to her.
It wasn't just me, though. Tess pointed it out, too. She's like, I like her teeth. I'm like, I know, right? That's what I was paying attention to, also. I was like, I have a crush on her teeth.
Okay, let's continue down that road. Like, what about it? Is it like they crooked, overbite, small, big, or
not they are crooked, but not in a horrible way. So front two teeth are a little bit like inverted a bit.
Ah, okay.
Like almost like making a inward V.
Okay. I can see that. I'm trying to recall times I may have seen the inside of her mouth. But yeah. I don't know how else to say that. But yeah, no, like across the board, I really liked Jack Quaid is excellent in this.
Yeah, he's good in everything. It's
kind of embarrassing.
You can forgive that,
right?
He's the son of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
because he gets it from his mom, who's perfect.
Who's his mom?
Meg Ryan. But
the
his
cheater?
Dad,
she cheated on.
On Dennis Quaid?
Yeah, it's with Russell Crowe.
Yeah, who the fuck? I mean, Dennis Quaid sucks.
Russell Crowe's the Pope's exorcist. Yeah.
Exactly.
Jack Quaid is absolutely fantastic. So is the rest of the cast. I love Harvey Guillen.
Something like that.
So,
did I tell you I did a movie with him?
No, you haven't.
A very, very long time ago, I did a movie with him, Ray Santiago, who plays Pablo in Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And Aurora Perrineau, right? What's his name? Perrineau, Harold Perrineau's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a horror movie. It was like, okay. It wasn't great, but yeah.
He's like excellent. He's like, he's just so funny and like charming very easily. Like, So it's like when you see him, I didn't know he was in this movie. So when he kind of like pops up in the movie, I was like, oh, okay, cool. This is gonna be fun, at the very least.
You know what? I kind of also was pleasantly surprised by. There's like another twist right later, but something where I was like, oh, interesting, because they, you know, made Lucas Gage and Harvey Guyon like a couple, and I was like, oh, okay. So I should have seen it coming, but
oh yeah, yeah. There's another twist to this story. Lucas Gage was actually excellent in this too, what he was asked to do.
Yeah.
And here's my biggest criticism. My biggest criticism.
What is it?
I did not like the Sergei character at all. To me, he sticks out kind of like a sore thumb as like not really fully rounded, realized character.
Yeah, he's the only guy that's not grounded, I think. Right? Yeah, he's a little too...
Right.
Yeah.
He has a mullet. He has a very like thick Russian accent. And to me, he's kind of a plot device. He doesn't... And while everybody else is pretty normal, right? Like Jack, Quaid, and Harvey,
both,
and everybody else.
Sergei and the cat character, I thought, were like... they're kind of just there to serve the plot, I think.
Yes, I agree. And that was probably one of the biggest things. And there's like another thing at the end that ain't really like was like weird, but yeah, I did not like his character at all. I thought he kind of didn't really fit the movie that they were making and was not really needed. Though it's a good performance, like it's not bad, right? Like it's, and some of the choices of like, oh, all his passcodes are Stalin's birthday, and I'm like, oh, that's a writer thing. That's not a real person thing. I mean, yeah. So,
I think they were just like in a weird, kitschy way trying to paint him to be a super bad guy, which there's a twist on that too, right?
Right, and I feel like they went too broadly with it.
Yeah,
that kind of takes away from, even though this is like science fiction and everything, it's still grounded enough where this is very, very plausible. Like this is could be like a near future type thing, right?
Yeah, because he went hard rape mode, but I think the justification was he was aware that she was a robot, you know.
I think everybody was, right? Everybody is, yeah, outside, right? outside of her.
But I mean, that's why I think he went full on rape mode.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was like, what does it matter? It's okay. This is what you're for.
And this is one of the disservices of the movie, I think, is that they tell us, right? Kat tells us he's a terrible person, right? And he doesn't show it. They don't show it, right? They just like, say that, oh, he's a terrible person. I mean, that's very like plot convenient because there's going to be some twist to all of that eventually. So that was like the one thing I was like, I don't really think that it worked. And he's only a plot device to get the story going, which is, you know, the larger plot with Iris and what ends up happening and stuff like that. So,
right.
But I like that, you know, at every turn they try to make the character, they do a really clever thing where like, basically like, Josh, the Jack Quaid character, control the character on his phone, can control Iris on his phone, like, you know, like any sort of...
It's like weird, like, billfold style open up phone. The...
Yeah. It's very large, foldable screen phone and stuff. And he's able to mess with the intelligence and mess with the, you know, different things because he's able to modder and stuff like that. So I really thought it was fun and really cool the way they dealt with, like, raising her intelligence and stuff like that, and like how she kind of thought everything through and how it would kind of make sense. So
and you know, that and the social commentary, and like, you know, Harvey is just a person of color trying to fit into a white world, and
mm-hmm.
I'm just kidding. What do you think? I kind of want to get into spoilers already. I just kind of want to talk about
Okay.
Lucas Gage.
Okay, yeah. All right, let's get into that. Spoilers.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Please stop the podcast.
because we're about to go into
spoilers.
Lucas Cage is also a robot.
Oh, which I totally called right away.
I was wondering. I was like, I guess that it made sense in retrospect, just because nothing against Harvey. It's just one of those things like
Lucas Cage is very pretty.
It would be. If you saw that in life, you'd be like,
right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Lucas Gage is a very attractive man compared. Yeah.
Which I can attest to. He was on the show I work on recently, and I'm like, wow, he's a really handsome guy. He's tall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's just very cool, like very like suave and cool and sexually ambiguous.
Sexually ambiguous. I liked the fact that they did a good job of like what is it like specifically the robots, right? Like the way they set up the rules and how they work, right?
Yeah.
And then they're kind of like, so they did a good job of like explaining how they work, and then kind of twisting them. And even having a big reveal at the end, right? That he basically like chose her to be this way, right? Which is probably like, I don't know if I'm getting too far ahead. That was one of the few things I didn't like, was how they reveal that information, right? Like how they reveal the fact that Josh's character basically made Iris this way, and that he could have made her self-aware, but chose not to. You know what I mean?
And that he intentionally wanted her to kill Sergey.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that to kind of get to the beginning plot of it is that they want to kill Sergey because he has a lot of money, and it's insinuated that he doesn't treat Kat well.
Yeah.
And so
we find out it's not actually true.
It's not actually true. Well, he may have not treated her well, and he was a terrible person for trying to like.
But her whole thing was like, no, he's a horrible boyfriend. Like, I mean, he's cheating on his wife, and it's like, okay, well, that makes you a bad person too. You're just right. Like, you want his money.
Yeah, and that Josh is sort of led to believe that Sergey is
A mobster
does drugs and kills people, but he just assumes that, Kat says, and then Kat also says that, like, you just assumed that and I didn't correct you, like not taking any responsibility for her behavior as well.
There is like a lot of moments in this movie that I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
But probably my favorite is when Iris steals the phone.
Oh yeah.
And when she opens it up. Because she's like, oh, I need his password. But of course she knows his password.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes to intelligence, and it's like at like 12% or something. And she's just like, oh, Josh.
Yeah.
And like raises it to 100. I was like, that's really funny. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Of course, this is how you want your women, you fucking loser.
Yeah. I love that too. And then I love the fact that it's set up early that she can't lie. So, yes. So. Now that she's like 100% intelligence, that she ends up trying to escape. Her big plan is to get in the car and escape. And there's like a cool little sequence where she kind of tricks the car into like basically auto turning on for her and self-driving. And then she ends up like the car is reported stolen, and there's like a cop. But the scene I like is that she turns herself in German, and she basically, because she can't lie, because she can't say what's really going on. So therefore, she turns German and is saying everything that's happening in German to the cop, because she can't lie to anybody, to humans. So I thought that was like, oh, that's brilliant. That's like setting the rules and then like sort of twisting them.
At this point, because it was also clever. Like it was pretty well written. Like this movie was like, you're right. Everything felt grounded and like earned.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so she can't lie. They can't lie. Lucas Cage at this point, Harvey has been killed by Iris because Harvey was trying to kill Iris.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was self-defense again. And Lucas Cage's character is just like mourning the loss of his love, his one love. And they had a pretty cute moment right before he gets killed, where he's like, you know, fuck it, I'm in love with a robot. Is that bad to say? I'm in love with a robot. I love you. And of course, you know, Lucas Gage is like, I know I'm a robot. I've known for a long time, but you know, I'm here for you. And it was like a very, like, I actually thought that was an endearing moment. And then Jack Quaid, of course, Josh is going to manipulate Lucas Gage into becoming like a killer robot.
But modding him and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And the only reason Iris is able to like change Lucas Gage's mind is because she's like, you know, I can't lie. Josh is manipulating you and you loved Harvey. I'm sorry, I don't remember.
Eli.
You loved Eli. You remember this? And he starts to remember and he starts to cry. And
right. Yeah. That was a very kind of thought provoking. There's even the very, very end. I think there's a very like thought provoking moment in the movie that kind of, I think it would be fun to talk about is when Josh kind of regains control and is like tortured Iris when he purposely makes her burn her hand and everything. Yeah. She tells her, okay, well now shoot yourself. And before she struggles to do it. And before she does, she says no. And it's kind of like, that moment to me reads as like the AI finally like becoming sentient in a way, right?
Yes, because one of the technicians,
mm-hmm.
Oh, which we didn't even talk about that. Those guys were funny.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite scenes too. Yeah.
It was Sid and Teddy, Matt McCarthy. It's like, oh, that's what happened to the robot. That's okay. We'll take care of it. And this is after we thought Iris had died because Iris shot herself in the head.
Right.
And Josh made her shoot herself in the head.
They're picking her up and everything because she's broken or going to be fixed or something. Yeah.
And he's like, oh, it's so sad. And the guy's like, I wouldn't worry about it. The CPU is in the stomach anyway. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
When they're walking out, he's like, man, do you think that guy...
Do you believe all that?
He's like, no, absolutely not. He modded the shit out of this. He's in so much fucking trouble.
Yeah, they didn't believe him. Yeah. I love that. That was such a one of the funniest moments in the movie.
But the Teddy character, I think, as a parting gift, because apparently you don't know this. It all happens off camera, but is also not happy with the way the robots are being treated or used.
Yeah.
So
go ahead. So no, I was going to say, I didn't like that moment because it happens off screen, right?
Yeah, I wish we could see it, but I do like that it's a reveal later.
Yeah, yeah, it's played to be that. Yeah, it's played to be like, now I know that you could have made me self-aware and stuff like that and given her more autonomy, but wanted to just kind of treat her as like a I don't know, like a slave or like a piece of technology that we have, like our phone or like fucking anything, something along those lines, where we're the kind of the one in charge, because Josh's character is very, you know, insecure. He's one of those guys that like, who thinks he's so brilliant that he can hatch this large plan, and that, you know, he's nobody appreciates him for it because he's, and this is the other thing,
and allegedly terrible in bed even for a robot. I thought that scene was funny.
I loved the set design of his apartment. It looked like the saddest single guy's apartment I've ever seen. He had the shitty TV, wooden TV trays and just trash everywhere.
Color scheme.
shitty leather couch or whatever. And just no furniture, no decor, no personality. Spot on. Absolutely spot on. Great detail. But yeah, that was probably my other biggest hang up, is that like it becomes another kind of like explanation for Iris, and it's put that way because it basically shows that, oh, another thing Josh didn't know, right? That he's not really like this clever guy or whatever, that she's based that about all of that. So that was like, I wish I could have seen it. I like the fact that the Teddy character did it is kind of like, I don't know. It's, it just seemed too plot convenient for me.
Yeah. I'm also, if Josh was an intelligent guy, he'd be like, okay, I did make you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody needs to know that. We're all rich now. So, like, let's just move on. I don't know. Anyway.
And how do you feel about the ending where she, like, takes a shower, rips off her hand, has that Terminator 2 moment.
Yeah.
And then she, like, drives away.
Sees another Iris.
Another Iris, yeah.
I like that. I thought that was cool. It's like a potentially the beginning of a new era, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, you know, Skynet's become aware. I'm trying to wrap my head around what this means for Iris, though. Does that mean she's just going to willy-nilly kill people? I don't think she ever wanted to do that.
I think it's left more in the realm of now she's free. She has her own autonomy, you know. She knows who she is, and she's going to go.
She's driving a badass. A
badass car.
She has or something.
A shit ton of money. So, yeah, it kind of seems like she's finally going to be out and a person and exist, right? Whatever that may mean, right? So could be Robot Uprise, could be fucking Westworld, or it could be, you know, it could just be, I don't know, something like Her, right? Or so the movie Her.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's left enough to where it's like, oh, this is a happy ending for now.
It could be like, do you recall a movie with, God, what's his name? Casey Jones. God, what the fuck's that guy's name?
Well, he has a complicated name.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. But there's like an old movie where it's kind of the same idea. There's like a robot and she's of course like super hot because it's fucking 90s. But he's like fighting somebody and then eventually kind of falls in love with this robot. And then what happens is, like, they go live off-grid together. And it's kind of like the passage of time and him just aging. And she's the same age, but she's still taking care of him.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have been Josh. Could have been Josh.
But, of course, it's another, like, commentary on internet men. Lonely internet men.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Single white males. No, I was kidding.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't he call himself a victim at one point? He says that. He's like, I'm a victim here. And he's like, dude, you're like a white male.
Yeah.
He says something along those lines, which that was another funny line.
Yeah. Which you're inclined to believe he believes everything he's saying. Like, he's that self-absorbed.
Right. Exactly. He's not a good person. All right. Do you have any other thoughts or do you want to rate the movie?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm ready to rate this puppy.
Okay. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it?
Sexy bones.
Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you know.
Show us your
sexy spooky bones.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie.
It's like I feel like I need to be clever about this, but I want to give it. I'm gonna give Companion 9 sexy spooky bones. Thank you for being fun.
Yeah. I'm going to say I'm also going to give it a 9, and I think this is the best movie I've seen this year. So far. I know it's fucking February, right? But
February, it feels like it's been 28 months since
True. January ran for 3 years. So, very true. But yeah, no, I think this is probably the best movie I've seen this year. It's easily 9 out of 10 movie.
Yeah. It's so easy to watch. It's like really good. Fun.
Yeah. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals. Thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky. Beep boop.